Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday Afternoon Show. I'm your host, Robert Tomlinson. Thank you for joining us on WGXC Acra 90.7. I am thrilled to have Mr. Vincent Seeley in the studio with us. Vincent is the, I guess you'd say, re-elected Catskill Village President for the Board of Trustees. Vinny, welcome.
That's right, welcome.
And thank you for being here. Before we engage in your new reorganizational plan, which I'm very excited to present and talk to you about, I think it would be interesting to find a little bit more about you.
Sure.
So, born in Brooklyn?
Born in Brooklyn. Mom, Angela, spent a lot of time in Brooklyn at a place called Garretson Beach. It's by Sheepshead Bay, Coney Island. And, a typical story sometimes of a family in Brooklyn that says, hey, we're going to get out of here and we're going to go upstate. And sure enough, they, got a place in Cairo, New York, and I lived there for about a year. And then my mom...
So how old were you at this point?
Well, I was second grade, give or take. I went back and forth a lot, lived with my grandmother and then lived with my mom up here. And then my mom met a guy named Jeff Seeley at a barbecue. And next thing I know, I'm up here permanently. I am in the Catskill School District, and I'm making Catskill School friends. And a couple times I would spend the summer back in Brooklyn with my friends there, and then at a certain point, my mom just said, "Nope, you're here now. This is it. You're up here now."
And siblings? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have Vanessa and Ashley, two sisters.
Two sisters.
Yeah,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and I got three nephews, little boys. Crazy. Love them, but they're crazy.
And two daughters.
And I have three daughters.
Three daughters.
I have three daughters.
Oh, I've only met two. Okay.
Yep. Only met two.
And how old are they?
I've got 26, 13, and 12.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's so a range. Lucky guy.
Yeah, they're fun.
So after high school in Catskill, what did you do?
Yep. So after high school, for the first summer, I was kind of deciding what to do. And I went over to first time I worked for my dad as a carpenter. That's kind of why I got into kind of building houses. Mm-hmm. And I just love being outside, work with my hands. And, went to Columbia Green, did 2 years at Columbia Green. And towards the end of the second year, IBM came in and said, hey, if you work for us for 4 years, it was almost like signing up for the service a little bit. And back then most kids are broke when they're going to college.
Sure.
Their parents, trying to not take out any student loans. And IBM said, if you sign on for us for 4 years, we'll pay for the rest of your school and get you a bachelor's. And I was like, where do I, I couldn't sign fast enough. I couldn't get down there fast enough. So I was in Fishkill, New York, and working on the ASTC, Advanced Semiconductor Technology Center, and basically worked in what they call a bunny suit. You put on basically full gear. You had to shave your eyebrows, your wax on your eyelashes. So if you were standing over any of the silicon, if it fell in there, you'd ruin a batch of microchips that were worth, back then, tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands today. And I did that. I worked the second shift for a while. And then they put me through more school. And you go through that rigorous training. And I'll be honest with you, on my third year, 363rd day, I was like, I'm out. I'm out. I did not like that environment. And I kind of vowed never to work for a big corporation again. It was a great learning experience, but it just didn't fit my entrepreneurial brain.
Right. It wasn't a good fit for you.
No, it wasn't a good fit. So then from there, I moved down to New York City and lived on 13 West 46th Street. And I worked for a phone company for a while, setting up computer systems. And then I worked on...
So you had some kind of inclination towards what was then the new technology.
Oh, yeah.
You love computers. You love the whole...
That was it. I mean, my first job here in Catskill was working for Beck Vending. And some of your listeners remember Beck Vending and Bill Beck. I called him, Mr. Beck. He was our town supervisor for years and years. And he hired me to work in the shop, loading up trucks with potato chips. And they just started converting the pull cigarette machines, pull the lever out. And they started converting them over to the electric ones. And these, old timers at the time, they probably weren't old timers, they're probably 30s or 40s. These old timers are like, what means this? How does this work? They couldn't get it. So I look at it, I'm like, yeah, it's just wires and it's buttons. And so I was able to fix them. So that was my after school job. I would get in the car, get in a van with one of these guys, and they would just ship me off. And I would go all over Greene County. And that's how I got to know a lot of people. I was like, little Vinny walking in, and I would fix their cigarette machines. And it was always like in Hunter Mountain, there would always be, for the candy and the cigarette and the soda, there'd always be a line of people when I got there. So I was like, you know, a hero. I'm like, oh my God, you're going to fix the machine. So now I can get my fix of candy or cigarettes or whatever it was. So that was it. So
then the beginning of your great popularity.
That's when it was right there. I knew how to make it work at that point. So that was it. So then I, you know, from there, pretty much started up a company. I'm kind of fast forwarding after the IBM in New York City. I was at Jacob Javits at a computer show way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I ran into this guy.
That's the convention center.
That's the convention. Convention center. And I ran into this guy. I was having a drink at the bar, and there's an older guy sitting at the other end of the bar, and we strike up a conversation. He goes, hey, you know, what do you do? So I went back and forth, and he goes, hey, do you know this place called Kingston, New York? He goes, there's this, back, they had tax credits to start a business there. And I was like, yeah, I know Kingston, New York. As I drive home, you know, drive up to Catskill to see my family, he goes, you want to, you know, I was young, so he's like, you want to make some beer money or whatever it was? I'm like, yeah, you know how that happens. You run into somebody and you never think you're going to hear from them again. And sure enough, you know, 2 weeks later, he says, meet me at Friendly's restaurant, which is down there in Kingston. And on the back of a napkin, he explained to me how managed healthcare and insurance worked on the back of a napkin. And he says, I want you to write a program. I want you to write an application that does what I just drew on this piece of paper. So that was the beginning of a company called Managed Physical Network. And we started that company up. And I mean, there's a whole long story of I sold it, bought it back, back and forth. But basically, that was kind of the beginning of a 20-year career with United Health Group, because they eventually bought us, and that's where I am today. And mm-hmm. I actually just took another job with the company, but it's kind of an offshoot of the company called UHG Ventures. So it's basically a company that they put together to go out and speculate on hospitals and urgent care clinics and stuff like that. So I'm kind of getting into that. I've done a lot of acquisitions over the years.
And you're such a people person. So this gives you, I hope, an opportunity. Then you interact and meet different people, different days. You never do the same thing twice.
It's, you know, I don't want to say it's a dream job, because it's, you know, there's probably a lot of other things I would do as a dream job, but this is the best fit for my skill set that I could come up with to make a living.
So but you also have a love for what I'm going to call the small house or the tiny house movement.
Yes. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
So tell us, because you've explored this. What have you done?
Yeah. So, you know, years ago, my father did timber frame, post and beam, timber frame. So no nails, all interlocked.
He was a carpenter.
Yep. And he would travel all over the place, and he'd take me in Connecticut, you know, all around and build these custom houses. And these things were gigantic. And we would argue the whole time. I'm like, why does somebody need this big, gigantic house? It never made any sense to me, you know. Uh-huh. So then as time went on, I said to my father, I want to build my own house on our property. We have a right here in Village Catskill. We had my parents had eight acres. So I said, I want to build a house here. And I designed up a really, really, really tiny house. And he went nuts. He was like, what just makes this? This doesn't even make any sense.
Are we talking 800 square feet?
Yeah. I was like, tell you, but look, I was living in Manhattan. It was just coming up, went to visit. And it was like, just, I don't want to say a flop house, but it was like kind of a little bachelor pad flop house up here. So I did that. And, everybody that came over and looked at it, they're like, this is perfect. This is like no bigger. We're not going to waste on heat. So then that's kind of when I started to think to myself, there is a market for this someday, And then we went through that housing boom where everybody was building those McMansions, we call them, because the banks were just giving you were qualified. You really should have only got a loan for 100, but they gave it to you for 300. So you bought a house that was three times the size you need anyway. All of that started to collapse, and then that's when I started building these small houses again. And we've got four of them so far. So they're great. They're people that are in them love them. They absolutely love them. Yeah. We're actually starting to work on another one here in the Village of Catskill probably within the next couple of weeks.
Well, they strike me as a model of efficiency for students, for seniors who are retired. They don't need, you know, a large home to take care of, families out on their own.
Yeah.
Seems like a really practical idea. And then, of course, utilities are getting more and more expensive.
Yeah.
So it seems like a good solution.
Yeah, we've built them with, you know, the insulated concrete forms on the ground floor, so the crawl space or the basements are insulated. I mean, they're really easy to build, but they're also fun to build because you can kind of do little tweaks on them based on that street or based on, you know, one of them we did with nice wood siding, one we actually did vinyl siding, which I don't like, but it actually fits the character of that street, you know. So you really can't just build what you want. You have to kind of look around and kind of architect it into the blend it into the street that you're on. So the latest one is a real challenge because it's a very, very narrow lot. So I'm thinking that we're going to have to be a little creative on height versus width and all that. So I'm kind of excited to get in the machine and start digging a hole.
Yeah, that's exciting. So politics.
Yeah.
So how did you find politics, or how did politics find you?
Yeah. So I'd say that a little of both, right? So, you know, while starting up this company I mentioned earlier, you know, on a weekend trip back to, might even been Christmas, Thanksgiving, you know, one holiday that you traditionally come home for, you know, sitting at the kitchen table and my father's complaining about something, you know, something politically, you know, somebody did this, somebody said that. Sure. And I said, you know, well, then, you know, why don't you go do something about it? He goes, well, why don't you do something? I said, well, I will, you know, and maybe it was like a dollar bet or something. Like, I don't even remember how, like, my mind thinks there was things that night, but let's just say it was like a challenge, you know what I mean? So then, yeah, so I got kind of involved in the community, started doing some, you know, pro bono computer work for our police department, did a village website way back then. And then a seat came up on the village board, and a couple guys approached me and said, hey, you know, we want to take a shot at it. And we do not have a political family at all. You know, there was never an, you know, maybe like a presidential race we had a comment about in the House, but never, you know, at local politics. It was just, you just didn't, nobody really paid attention to it. And I ran and I won.
So this is 12 years ago?
12, yeah, it's going to be 13 years. Yeah. It's on 13th year. So, yeah.
You say that as if you were surprised. Were you surprised at the time?
Yeah, no, because, you know, you just don't know. You just, right. You run. Sure. It's you people, and I've learned over the 12 years, you know, people come up to you and, you know, they talk to you and they say, you know, great job, or, you know, we're going to vote for you. But you just, you know, everybody goes in there and they vote the way they got to vote. And that's the way it goes. But I've learned that if you work hard and you kind of keep your commitments and just, I don't want to say tell the truth, because that's kind of a cop out in a way, because you should tell it anyway. But really comes down to kind of always have a plan of attack for the decisions that you make, regardless of which way they go. Right? So you say, I think we should do X. Well, if it fails, you know what I mean, you really should have a way to unwind it and make it right. And then if it's successful, rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good day. So, you know, and that's the way I, that's my corporate world. That's my personal life. That's my building my little houses. Like, you always got to have kind of an A, B, and a C plan at everything that you attack.
So if a younger person was coming to you today and said, you know, I'm kind of interested in politics, what should I do? What would you advise me? What would you say to them?
Yeah, you know, first things that they need to do is really start attending meetings, you know, coming to village board meetings, coming to town board meetings. We have a planning board that basically gets anything new that's coming to our community. You go up in front of the planning board and you could learn a lot from that. You can learn, you know, there's a guy that right now, there's somebody who wants to put a glamping, you know, the fancy camping. They want to put a camping in the village of Catskill at one of our old resorts. He explained the business model, explained the whole, you know, kind of the whole thing. So as a new person, you could say, wow, this is something that's pretty cool coming to this town. You just hear those. So the planning board, you got the zoning board of appeals. You've got what we call a local development corporation. You can go to county meetings. I mean, then you could kind of gauge what you're interested in. You go to school board meetings, you go to library board meetings. You know, there's so many different ways you can get involved. I don't do good with people who just jump right out of bed and say, I'm going to run for, you know, I want to be a trustee, because what winds up happening is, although you have good ideas, not kind of understanding kind of the flow of information and kind of having a baseline understanding of what the community needs, you go in there and a lot of times you go in there and some people have a very, very fixed agenda, and it's hard to meld that into kind of our, you know, what we're going to go over to in this call, on this show is going to be, you tell I do conference calls all day. I was on this call. My life is based off of conference calls.
I know you spend a lot of time on the phone.
I do. Yeah. So yeah, so this show. So we'll go over some of these projects, but I'd love to get some of the young folks that are or young and old, anybody that wants to get involved in politics. Come talk to us and sit down and come to some of the meetings and see if you could help us out on one of these projects, get your feet wet, and then start to make a decision if you want to be part of the political kind of, you know, the political flow of things.
Good advice. Well, I'm glad we talked about that, because I've been curious to see sort of what was your path into politics.
Yeah,
you seem very dynamic and you seem to care a lot about what's going on in the village. So let's talk about the new plan.
Yeah.
So you have what I have in front of me is called the New Projects and Funding. Well, actually, I've got several things in front of me.
Yeah.
That's only one of them.
Yeah.
Is the chart. So the Village of Catskill reorganization. You're making some specific proposals. I have the draft in front of me.
Yeah. So
let's talk about that.
Sure.
First of all, why is this important to do this now?
Well, let me tell you that every year the board elects a board president, and every year we go through what's called a reorganization meeting. And at that point, that's our opportunity to, you know, either change our course or put another stamp on that course to say we're comfortable with this going forward. Okay. So this reorganization meeting happens every year. And I'll be honest with you, over the 12 years, you know, we've tweaked things along the way, but we've not really made any material changes to the way that we do business. And it's worked, you know, it's worked. There's really nothing. But I really feel like we're at a point in our history, not only just politically, but fundamentally getting things done and the functions that the and the services that the village that we need to provide to the people moving here and the people that have been here, we need to change the way we do business. And this is the start of it. You know what I mean? I'm not taking too big of a bite this first time, but really just laying the groundwork on it.
So I have in here that you are introducing recommendations to, quote, abandon the broad-based committee structure for a more as-needed project-based approach. So can you tell me, what does that mean? And structurally, what does it mean? And why is that important?
Yeah. So, you know, you have a committee that in the past was the Economic Development Committee, okay. Or you have the, police committee or Public Safety Committee. And it's so broad, and you have folks in there. Don't forget, we're part-time. You know, we're the village board and town board. These are part-time jobs. So you don't, and typically we don't have a full-time administrator. The county has a full-time administrator. Sean's over there. The village and the town do not. So essentially either your board president or your mayor sort of acts as that person. But again, it's still a part-time job. So when you're sitting in front of you and you've got this scope of a committee that's public safety, you sit down, and I've seen it happen over the years, you get so thinned out that nothing ever gets done. Mm. So my opinion and my approach that I've pitched to the board was let's change that a little bit. You know, we're still going to have liaisons to the department. So the police chief is going to still go to Trustee Chewins. The DPW, Michael's going to go to Trustee Kozlowski. But we're going to do it more on project-by-project based. And I'm not even going to call them committees. These are projects. So one of the examples I've been using is a water tower. Mm-hmm. At some point, we are going to need a backup water tower built in the village of Catskill. And a water tower isn't like you'd see in the old days where this big thing stands up in the sky and it looks like a big giant spaceship on four legs.
On a rooftop in Manhattan.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That doesn't exist anymore. I mean, you can build one if you want to, but people don't want to build them. They're very low profile. You pick the highest spot in the village and you could basically sink most of it underground. So they're very low profile and you could do a lot of things to make it integrated into that specific neighborhood or even hide it. You know what I mean? Just put a lot of...
So how many gallons are we talking about size-wise?
So probably 1 million gallons.
And what do we have now?
We have no backup water supply right now. So bottom line is so our reservoir is in Coxsackie. If we had a failure there, you've got about...
A failure or a contamination of some kind?
You could. I mean, yeah, you could. Yeah, okay. You could just basically shut the valve off and then go from there. So the bottom line is you've got probably... you know, maybe on water restrictions a day worth in the lines. Because you got to realize these are miles and miles and miles of lines that are very thick, 16-inch lines, sometimes even bigger than that. So that holds the volume. There's probably physics majors out there that could tell me exactly what's in these lines. But basically, you could last a day off of that. And we've had that happen once where we had a water main break during the winter a couple of years ago coming off of there where we had to shut it down, but we were able to, you know, get it back up and running quick. Anyway, the bottom line is we really need to have a backup water supply. So we would actually put this in. So my example
now,
of this...
To determine the point of actual need rather than projected need, is it a population-related calculus? Is it, do you think, okay, once we get past 5,000, we need a, you know, backup?
Or yeah.
What determines the real need?
So unfortunately, it's two things, right? So the first thing is the Department of Health could come in and say, you cannot do any more hookups. You cannot let anybody else hook up to your water system without this, right? So they put a kind of a stamp on, you know, they put their foot down. They say no more hookups. The second part of it is financial, right? I would say to them, sure, but we don't have $1.5 million to build this water tower, right? So the only way to get that is to up your water rates. So it's this shell game of sorts of saying, okay, you know, I want to, you know, I want to keep expanding. And I joke around with the board and I sell, we sell Pepsi, or we sell a product. Water is a product, and our sewage processing of the sewage is a product for us. So we charge people what it costs us to create that water, that product, that Pepsi. So we've been kind of squirreling away a little bit of money as time goes on, but we've got to bite the bullet at some point. So the example of my project-based thing is that, to me, is a project, and that you're going to require somebody from finance, you're going to require somebody from legal, you're going to require somebody that's going to be able to help us map out there. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a project manager of that. That's going back to that project focus, and then that becomes something that is reported in by the department heads. One person owns that project. Let's just say it's Mike McGrath, our superintendent of highways. He'll own that project. He reports back in weekly.
And he has a specific liaison to the trustees?
Exactly, which would be Trustee Kozlowski. Yep. Okay. And they've worked together for years.
Right.
So then that comes back to the village board on a weekly basis, and then we kind of rifle through the all the projects in flight, mm-hmm. any new projects that get injected in there, mm-hmm. and then we make prioritization recommendations and financial recommendations mm-hmm. on a weekly cadence. Not to say that we're going to meet for 14 hours every week. This could be done, this could be done through some emails. This mm-hmm. could be done through our every other week board meeting. Carve out, the first 15 minutes is a quick bullet. Go. Here's my project. Here's the status on this. Are you green? You red? Are you yellow? Are we in budget? Yep. Mm-hmm. Boom, boom. Mm-hmm. Go right down the line. So that's kind of the change there.
And then with each one, you have a new project and funding flow form.
Yes.
So would each one of these projects have a form that is really a kind of an accountability form?
Yeah.
Right. So it sort of describes the project. Yep. It gives ideas about how to fund it, how long it will take, who's going to be the various partners in it, and then you can actually keep track of the progress. Is that correct?
That's correct. And part of the decision-making process is, we over the years we've got inundated. If somebody had, and I'll use our fire department mm-hmm. as an example, if they needed to buy a new fire hose and they had it in our budget, in the past we may have gotten five or six emails back and forth about something that was already budgeted, something we've already discussed at the budget meetings, that mm-hmm. we know you need 100 feet or whatever, whatever they budgeted for.
Right.
Those are the ones that I'm saying, look, we know you're accountable for your department. You've worked with us on your budget. We know you need 100 feet of this. Under a certain amount, go ahead and get it. Do what you got to do. Talk to your liaison. In this case, it would be Jim Chewins and their tag team, and Jimmy and Joe tag team, and then go ahead. Anything over a threshold, let's say $5,000, needs to fill out this form that your listeners can't see, but it basically does exactly what you said. There's a opportunity or problem description. What is the value? What's the cost? Where is this money come? Is it budgeted? If it's not, where do you propose getting this money from? Mm-hmm. We don't have a money tree. Mm-hmm. So it really works us all the way down, mm-hmm. and then it ends up on that weekly meeting mm-hmm. where we say, hey, keep bringing back the water tower. Mike, mm-hmm. Mike may report in and say, hey, we're $10,000 under budget. We're doing really good. We found some, we thought we were going to have to chisel through rock. We don't, but whatever. We're 10 grand in. So then we can make a decision as a board to say,
we could borrow $5,000 of that.
In your house, right? Mm-hmm. Think of it just on a larger scale of in your mm-hmm. house mm-hmm. of you make decisions pretty much every month on sometimes how you want to pay bills or make investments or pay your credit card bill down because you saved some money in groceries that month.
Sure.
But it's all just financial management and getting it much, much, much cleaner and much, much more fair.
So how does it work now in a current committee structure?
Well, you wind up, So
do you have this kind of accountability in terms of a form and project goals and dates?
No, none of it exists in the sense that we go through a budget process, which we're starting at the next village board meeting. You go through our budget, our fiscal year is June to June, mm-hmm. right? So we start our budget process now. Everybody brings their, I call it somewhat of a wish list, right?
Sure.
We've got things we have to pay for, right? We've got to pay for healthcare, pension. There's some fixed things that we, and there's some capital costs that we have to pay for, right? Trucks that are broken and not working, we've got to replace them. We can't, we need to replace them. Mm-hmm. So we've got capital costs. Then we've got, the project list. And that project list every year is things like, for example, sidewalks, repairing our village-owned sidewalks on Main Street. Every year we make a decision, okay, is there another priority that's higher than that? But it only happens at that one particular point. So you really only have this kind of...
You only have once a chance a year
really
to really do it?
One chance a year to really do it. We talk about it during the year, but we never have this kind of this financial acumen to say to ourselves, okay, look over here, we've saved $5,000, we need sidewalks that are $2,000, mm-hmm. kind of work together and, mm-hmm. And piece all that together. We've never really done that. It's always been on the fly, and it's always been, you know, hey, you know, do we, you know, we've got an emergency purchase we need because a truck's transmission blew out and it's $15,000 or whatever it is. Then it's a scramble to find that money. And, right. and then you wind up looking at somebody else's project and saying, you can't now have sidewalks, which they've already planned for, mm-hmm. because we haven't done a good job right. doing that. So that's what this is. Okay. It's just putting a little bit more regimen around our purchases and really make our department heads and people that are requesting the funds and the projects to really think through, how does this fit in the overall picture for the village? Mm-hmm. You know, and what are other ways to fund it, and what are other ways to get this done? That's basically
so,
what we're going to
do. So I see also in here, there's six key priorities. Yes. That you've outlined instruction. I hope we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about, so under the new plan, mm-hmm. who will decide what the priorities are or what projects will, I mean, there's going to be levels of, this is a given, we have to do this. This is a maybe, this is something we'd like, but yep. Maybe not this year. Yep. I mean, how do you decide either individually or collectively how to orient that list of priorities?
Yep. So the goal is to have, you know, always will be the five trustees will review these, and the five trustees will, you know, lobby their interest and kind of make a case for if it's their project or
to each other.
Okay. You know, and these will be public meetings. We're going to carve out time probably once a month in our every other Wednesday meeting, carve out time in the beginning of the meeting. Let's say it's the first half hour, just to make up a time frame here. And we go through these fast fire and then allow somebody. And then afterwards, as with every meeting we have now, we're going to allow the public to comment on some of them. And it could be, you know, we know we're going to get a lot of, yep, you should fix the potholes, because every day I drive to Price Chopper and I drive in a pothole. And I get it, and we want to make sure we think that, you know, think about it, because that's a real problem for somebody, but we also have to take an account for the bigger projects. So right now, what we're going to need to do is assign a point system to these, right? So you're going to have, you know, 1 through 10, 10 being has to be done, right? Mm-hmm. We absolutely have to pay for medical, you know, we have to pay the bill. We have mm-hmm. to pay this bill. Mm-hmm. That's a 10. You know, a 5 would be something like sidewalks on Main, right? Now, people could argue with me and say, you know, that should be up higher than 10, but it also is going to go to the condition of the sidewalk. And I know I keep bringing up sidewalks, and there's probably 14 other projects that are better examples than a sidewalk.
Okay.
But the bottom line is, these are going to have point systems, and there'll be some emotion in it, because, you know, you're going to want to say this is the most important thing for the village to do right now. But at the end of the day, the numbers aren't going to lie, right? Mm-hmm. Something has to be done, and that thing, after you add everything up, that's a 90, mm-hmm. and your other project's an 80. And quite frankly, that's an easy way to say to somebody, look, your project, unfortunately, didn't make it above the line. It's on the list. If you can come back to us mm-hmm. with some more benefits of this, maybe mm-hmm. it'll save us some more money, which will push it up on the point list, or maybe there's something that we haven't seen. Go back and kind of sharpen your pencil, mm-hmm. which will force them to either A, look at it and say, you know what, we really didn't need to do this. We figured out a better way or a different way to get this thing done. Or they come back and they sharpen their pencil, and then that's 91 the next time, and then that beats out somebody else's. And mm-hmm. and I think that
challenge. Can you give us some examples of actually how you will establish that? So obviously, how much it costs. How much it benefits the village? How much benefits?
So it's going to be safety, legal,
okay,
cost, right? Because safety, if we've got something that's a danger, you know, we've got to take care of that. Legal, is there something legally that's forcing us to do this? And legal to me is a mandate by the governor's office, right? You now have to, whatever, paint your police cars yellow. I don't know, right? So we have to do that. It's an unfunded mandate. We've got to paint our police cars yellow. Then it's going to be financial. You know, does this save us any money, right? Does this save money, and is this a wise expenditure for the taxpayer's dollar? Mm-hmm. And then
would that encompass also like economic development related concerns about like tourism?
Yeah.
Would it be part of that?
Yep. Great segue for I don't know how much time we got, but I want to go into the economic development part of this, because that's so keep that, listeners, keep the economic development piece, because there's a whole different conversation I want to have about that. So that's how it would go. You know, safety, you know,
legal.
All the way, legal, finance, all the way down the line to, you know, you get to a point where, you know, one of them on my list here is our dog park, mm-hmm. right? So there's mm-hmm. been, as I go around, I see a lot of people moving up. And they're moving up from the city quite frankly, and they have their dogs, and they're used to going to a dog park that's chained up. It's a very specific, got a little lead-in area. We don't have chained-in dog parks up here. Most of us have yards, you know what I mean, have yards. And now I'm seeing more and more people, and I'm becoming friends with them and understanding their need. So now that dog park fence, or making us a dog-friendly, walk-friendly village, is now moving up on that point list in my head. It's never going to trump the safety issue. Mm-hmm. It's not going to trump, you know, maybe a legal issue that we're in, but it's definitely builds its way up the list, and we can start saving up for that, and we can look for different ways. So the dog fence, for example, is one of the people that came to me and asked about that. I said, hey, you know, really comes down for us for money, you know? And they said, well, we'll do a fundraiser. We'll put something together, and we'll have all the dog owners, dog lovers, and maybe, you know, we can get some sponsors from the, you know, local dog food company, whatever, however they go about doing it. Mm-hmm. But again, it goes back to my point of thinking it through, not just saying, oh my God, people want a dog fence, let's go spend some money on a dog fence right now, start drilling holes and putting up, really put it back into the person that's coming up with this idea and the need, and say, is there a better way to do this? And to me, that's a community building thing, having a fundraiser, bringing all the dog people together. Then you can start talking about, you know, how do you care for your dog? You know, we've got a big problem around here with people not picking up after their dogs. But I think if they got to, you know, got to a place where they had this community starting to gel and they could talk to each other, and maybe it's about us putting up more of these dog drop box, you know, the sure. little boxes. Right. Sure. My point is, I'm just trying to use this as a catalyst to make people think differently, do some community building, and really make them understand that, look, at the end of this, we've added this up, and you're a 20 out of 100.
Right, right.
It's important to you. And it's important to me, but overall,
you have to own it and make it happen.
You have to make it happen. Make it happen or solve it a different way. Right, right. So that's that. So that's,
but that's also interesting that you're also pointing out that you're asking people to be collaborative partners with their local government.
Oh, and that's so much so.
That's wonderful.
So,
but what I also hear in the summary is, so greater efficiency seems like not only in keeping track of a project, but also in just having the trustees be able to assimilate all the information in a really cohesive, quick manner.
Yes.
You can track the progress of something. You can follow it to the specifics of its economic progress as well. So that seems like a kind of a win-win situation, right?
Yeah.
And so what would be the challenges to implement, and what would be the roadblocks for this kind of a system? I'm sure there's going to be people who don't want to change just because they don't like change.
Right.
But other than that?
Yeah. You know, and we all just, all of us have to be change agents for, you know, for this. We've got to really sit down and say to ourselves, you know, what can we do to make this simpler and make this palatable for the people that may have a challenge against it, right? So I think one of the things that could happen is, you know, again, you tend to get passionate about your project, and you tend to take it personal. Mm. You know what I mean? Your dog fence becomes a personal thing, or your sidewalk project becomes a personal thing because your neighbor keeps bringing it up to you every time you're mowing your lawn. and we have to be better. And hey, look, I'm guilty of it, just as any other trustee is. I'll throw myself on the carpet. I am guilty that if, you know, sometimes that squeaky wheel, you know, I'm just like, go fix that. Just please go fix that. So I don't have to hear about it anymore.
Sure.
But we really have to be honest. And this gives us a little bit of a process to say to somebody, yep, I hear what you're saying. We've got a process for that. Mm-hmm. Come help me get this to the top of the list.
And so it objectifies it rather than being subjective and personal.
Exactly.
It's establishing your priority list.
I think that's a paradigm shift for some of our people that live here and some of the folks that are on the board. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be for myself too. So I'm in this all myself to make sure that I do this and stick to it.
Right. So I'm excited to talk about economic development.
Yeah.
Let's get to that.
Okay. So we used to have a committee, right? I don't even want to use that word anymore. We used to have a committee in the village that was called economic development. And, you know, to me, it wound up being, you know, a developer comes to town, you go out to lunch with them, you give them the grand tour of the village. This is the greatest place on the earth. You know, in the dictionary, the word paradise is picture of Catskill under it. You know, you give them the whole, you give them the whole song and dance, and you take them around and you say, you know, whatever the economic driver is at the time, you know, we're low rent. You know, Hudson is three times the amount of our rent. So come here and you're going to get in on the bottom floor. We're not good at that. We're not equipped for that. You know what I mean? We're part-time. We're a mixed match of different skill sets on the board. And not all of us have the same time off to go and entertain this. Now, we do have something called the Local Development Corporation, which is the LDC.
Got it.
And the LDC was formed probably 10 maybe even 12 years ago. And really, the charter for it has kind of morphed in and out over the years. But essentially, it is the economic development arm of the village.
It's the active component.
And we've never really merged the two, right? It's been the LDCs over here. And you've had the village board over here. And they both had their things going on. Very rarely would they touch other than, oh, you guys are doing Project 90, which was a project that the LDC did. And then, you know, the board would, because there's board members on, I'm on both boards, Jimmy's on both boards, so on and so forth. Joe's the president. So, you know, what I'm proposing right now is that we now turn over the economic development component of the village to the LDC and make it official and let them. We've got almost we almost have somebody from every interest on there. We've got, you know, two restaurateurs. We've got an artist. You know, we've got
a bookstore.
Christie's on there.
Yes, of course.
You know what I mean? So we have we've peppered it with the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, so that they can really put their heads together and say, you know, yes, we need a hotel. Where should it go? How do we find an investor for it? So you've got the first thing that's on my list to do. It's on one of my major projects for this year is take an inventory of our underdeveloped or vacant parcels in the village. I mean, to me, it's just you've got to know your inventory. You've got to know your inventory. And then if a parcel is for sale, and let's say I'm going to make up numbers just for easy Vinnie math here. Let's say, you know, the person wants $1 million for it. But we know it's been on the market for 4 years and it's worth $450. Sit down and really look. It's a free country. You can put your property up for $10 billion if you want to. I get it. But to help that person understand that by keeping that price too high, you are stopping development on a specific street and a specific area. So let's work together to figure out how you can still make a profit, right? I want you to make money off of this because you've made the investment, you've paid taxes all these years, you weed whacked it, whatever you've done to it. But I want you to also realize that you need to be a partner with the village and take that money that you make, roll it over. And I think if you do it a couple times, you're going to make the same amount of money of sitting on this thing for 5 to 10 years and it not moving and it being the kind of the dead lot on the street. So inventory first of all the underdeveloped vacant lots, underdeveloped or vacant lots, and then bring that back to the LDC, have them take a look and say, you know what, a hotel would go good here. All right. So then let's just say that's their priority. And I want to say it's the same point system. They can come up with their own point system, but I'm serious about kind of just saying, okay, they kind of vote and say, hotel is the most important thing, then kind of drill that down and say, okay, do we have the land for it? Check that box off. Yes, it's $1 million. Okay. What type of hotel? Is it a Motel 6? Is it a Holiday Inn Express? Is it a private enterprise that we need to go find angel investors to do? Work your way down and come up with that project. Not a committee. And say the project is a hotel on this tax parcel, 12345. We need $2 million, you know, whatever. You get my point of where I'm going with this. And then that becomes our driving factor of what they wake up in the morning to get done. Right now, it's a little bit of a shotgun approach because we've had to, you know, we've got a lot of things coming in from a lot of different people, but we have to get very, very, very laser focused on picking something, seeing it all the way through, making sure it makes sense for the community and financially and tie it to smart growth.
So in your opinion, just as an overview, a quick overview, what are the top three things you think the Village of Catskill needs?
So from an economic or just in general?
Well, let's do economic.
Economic. So,
a hotel is a high on most people's list. But there's the boutique hotel versus a chain hotel at the intersection.
There you go, right.
That's the discussion that needs to happen.
So and all of this is intertwined, right? So not one stands by itself. Street traffic, foot traffic for Main Street is key, right?
For economic vitality.
For economic vitality, because the bottom line is this: if somebody comes in and I've gone to lunch with them, you know, a developer will come and scout a town. He'll just come in. He'll be a regular person. He'll just be a regular person. Come in, park his car, put money in the meter, walk up and down the street, go in, get a cup of coffee. Hey, what's going on around this town? Hey, I'm passing through. What's going on around this town? And I would say that 50% of the time you're going to get a negative reaction from somebody. Sundays, nobody's open on Sundays, or their hours are crazy around here. I go to get a cup of coffee. You get where I'm going. So that developer is like, they really probably don't have it together here. Now, if the LDC gets their project straight, and we socialize this, we advertise this, and somebody goes into there and says, hey, what's going on around this town? Man, we've got a plan for this hotel up on the old blah 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 property, and we've got a team working on it. So the street traffic is number one, getting people on the street to purchase from these things. But the second thing for me is to get the community aligned with our vision and what we're trying to get done for the village, and get them on lockstep with us so that people are in the know of what we're doing. For example, sewer project that goes from the village of Catskill. We're doing a sewer line that goes all the way out to Leeds. Sounds great, right? We've heard water park, we've heard casino, I've heard 52 things, right? We need to have a very clear and concise plan. So when people are asked at their dinner table at Easter, or they're traveling and somebody says, oh, you're from Catskill? Yep. We just put through economic development, a sewer line all the way up, which is going to open that corridor up to blah, 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 blah. And that's important to me. So that's the most important project that we have going right now, is to nail down and socialize some of our projects to make sure people are in lockstep.
And that they understand, that they just have the basic knowledge of what's going on, what's on the development table.
Absolutely.
There is something curiously wonderful going on in Catskill right now. I can think of four or five new businesses that will be opening officially in the next month or two, starting with Hilo, the Catskill Commons, there's the shoe store, there's a framing store.
Yep.
So why do you think that's happening now? I mean, there seems to be a flurry of really wonderful.
We've got two things going for us, right? So one, quite frankly, we're kind of hip right now, right? You come here, we're still a little gritty, you know what I mean? You go to other towns, and I'll say their names. Like, you go to Hudson, you go to Saugerties, it's just a different vibe. I'm not saying it's good or bad.
Right.
They're just different than us.
Right.
So people...
They don't have a WGXC.
Do not have a WGXC.
There you go. Community radio station.
There it is.
At its best.
So those towns, they're specific vibes, and I think we're catching... We're catching the wave of the people that want something a little bit different.
Right.
That's number one. And number two, we are still very, very, very cost-effective entry point for somebody who says, you know what? I've always wanted to open a coffee shop, or I always wanted to open a whatever.
Mm-hmm. Or, that was a shout-out, right?
That was a shout-out.
To Liam and Laura.
Yeah, it was, too.
Hilo's opening this week, folks.
It is. We love them. the bottom line is, you take somebody that's in... let's say Hudson or Saugerties or even Brooklyn, and they're paying $3,600 rent, and they can come and get something on our street, I guarantee it, for less than $1,000. That's either more profit in their pocket, or that's, or they can make more capital investments in their product or their line of products, or they can survive. You know what I mean?
Right.
It really comes down to, in some cases, survival.
Almost all those people I just mentioned are working downstairs and living right above where they
work.
Oh,
and I love it. And that's so
the old
important
mom and pop. Structure that's so wonderful.
Best day ever is when in the morning you get a chance on a Sunday morning, Saturday morning, take a drive down the street, let's say 7 o'clock, and you'll see some of these folks out there with a broom like you would see in the 50s and the 40s, 50s, 60s sweeping the sidewalk, really caring that there's a piece of paper out front and that the garbage pail is banged up. I want people to tell me and yell at me and say, that sign's crooked or that garbage pail looks ugly, because that means that they actually are paying attention to that kind of stuff.
Right.
So anyway, getting back to kind of the priorities, infrastructure, Joe Kozlowski, Trustee Kozlowski, has been such a huge advocate for our infrastructure over the years. And quite frankly, that is the primary reason why we're able to expand that sewer line all the way up to Leeds. That's why we're only at what's called safe yield for our water system. We only use about half of the water that we have, that we can use, that the Department of Health said you can use. I think we could use 1.4 million gallons a day, and let's say we use 700,000 gallons. It's pretty close to those numbers. So that means we could essentially almost build another Catskill, another town the size of Catskill off of our water system. That wouldn't have happened without making key investments over the past 12 to 14 years of upgrading our infrastructure, switching out water lines that were constantly breaking. Five, 8 years ago, we had water lines popping all over the place around here. You would, all day long, we would hear, the guys are over on this street plugging it up and that street plugging up. not that many. And I hope I didn't jinx you guys right now for a water main break, but we are so, there are so few and far between, mm-hmm. and they know where they are because these are old laid up. Some of them are old clay pipes.
Mm-hmm. You know? I know that Joe sort of led the charge on this, yeah. but he's the first person that would also share credit with many others.
Yeah, true. That's his style.
His style, and it's good. Very he's, impressive in that but, way. So what do we need to look at 12 years from now that we might need to be doing so that we're set up for the next wave of growth in 12 to 15 years? Is there something specifically we should be doing?
Yep. Housing. I mean, housing is...
Affordable
is
housing?
Affordable housing.
Small houses?
I've been cautious about what affordable housing is, right? Because the government comes out and they say if affordable house is mm-hmm. X mm-hmm. or affordable house is Y. And
or people think of Section 8 housing.
That's it's not affordable housing. I mean, just somebody that has in today's world has a job that they can afford their own home. I mean, it's just that simple. Whatever that dollar amount is will depend on where you live in the community, what kind of a house you want. Do you want a nice smaller house or do you want a McMansion? You've got to make a decide. So housing is a big thing. We have a huge backlog of renters right now. Huge backlog of renters.
So we need more rental property.
We need more rental property and we need more affordable houses. And what's happening is we're starting to lose these folks to other towns. Mm. And then when we lose them, they go grocery shopping in these other towns. They get their coffee in these other towns. They eat dinner in these other towns. So as we start to lose these folks, we see less and less traffic here in the village. Mm-hmm. And we've got to, that's something that we've got to make sure that we take care of because our labor force here is very small. And
so that's also another issue is employment, right? Future employment. Huge.
Look, and I definitely will not mention names on this one, but I go to some of these local restaurants and they open up in the summertime or they ramp up in the summertime. And I go in there and I look at the wait staff and I don't know anybody. I don't know who they are. They ship them in from other places because they're, and so I'll say to the owner, hey, you know, look, I want you to, you know, can you please hire some local? And Vinny, we try. You just don't have the workforce here. Mm-hmm. So they'll ship them in from other places and work here, which, you know, I'm not going to say it takes a job away, but it sort of does because, right, they're going to make their money here. They're going to mm-hmm. drive home to wherever they live. Mm-hmm. Again, go back, buy a cup of coffee, gas up, wherever they live, and then we're missing that. We need to improve our labor pool for what's coming in for more of a service industry, and we also need to get affordable houses and rentals that meet the needs of the public that are here mm-hmm. and also the folks that are coming in mm-hmm. now. So that's, you know, call it whatever you want, affordable housing. I just call it housing for the people right now.
So what do we do really well that distinguishes us from other towns? I mean, I would start to say the library is, of course, they provide us the space.
Yeah.
But we have a wonderful library and a library system that serves the community really well. And they do a lot of outreach.
Even higher level than that, it's our community.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, some of us have jobs that I don't work here in Catskill. My job is a global job. I can live wherever I want. Mm-hmm. I choose here because of the community. It's not because there's this great lineup of things that I've always wanted to be here. It's really, I see this as a grassroots community. I see people pulled together. I see new people moving in and melding with the folks that have already been here. Mm-hmm. And I see the synergy between all of that. That's exciting for us. When you come to this town, I'm going to throw Laura and Liam back under the bus with this. We've been down helping them get set up down there.
And let's explain to our listeners. This is for Hilo.
Hilo.
On Main Street.
Yes, Hilo on Main Street.
They've been working for many months.
Many months.
And they're going to open this week. They passed their health inspection. We're all thrilled.
Yes.
And so they have it's a bar, cafe, performance space, gallery.
Coffee shop, everything, coffee shop. All in one. So we've been helping them kind of the last minute, you know, Hail Mary, get them ready to go. And, you know, while I'm working in there, just so many people come and peek in the door. Never seen them before. Peek in the door. What's this going to be? And, you know, then they give them the spiel. You know, it's going to be just what you said, coffee shop, you know, rent space. And they're like, yeah, we, and this is the truth. We live in Saugerties. We don't want to live there anymore. We want to live in Catskill. What do you have here? So, you know, I jump up, my ears perk up, and I say to them, oh, we got, you know, this place over here, that place over there. Mm-hmm. We're getting people that are interested in here because of the vibe. Mm-hmm. It's what we've done right is we've established this base level of welcoming people to our community mm-hmm. and quite frankly, just not wanting it to change a lot. You know, people, you know, I've had this argument. I don't want to be Hudson. I don't want to be Connecticut. but I also don't want to be someplace else either. I want this to be us.
Can we mention the role that the arts and culture will play in this?
I think it's
significant, right?
It's huge. You know, at the last village board meeting, our friends from the Cole House came in, Ms. Tintalin, and she gave a kind of an overview of how much, you know, something like the Cole House brings to the community. It was hundreds of thousands, you know, 20,000 visitors, probably more than that, but just in a massive amount that, again, go buy a cup of coffee, they gas up, they do all this stuff here.
Sure.
And what I'm starting to see is the creativity in our community and the ability for people to not just rely on the village government to do stuff. They want to go and they want to do it themselves.
Well, this is what also I mentioned earlier, the collaborations that occur. Yeah. We see that in the new GCCA show that's about to open up, the off-the-wall sculpture show. Many, many people and storefronts are participating in that. The library, I mentioned, the community center does the before and after school programs.
Yeah.
ADI is coming in at the lumber yard.
Yeah.
I mean, we're getting rich with talent and opportunities in our community.
Yeah.
And we're very lucky. And I think that partly defines what you're talking about as the vibe, in addition to just an attitude about being here.
Yep. It's the vibe. And then it also brings investment, right? I mean, really, anywhere you've looked in the history, in our history, or even recent history, last 100 years, art and culture move in first.
Yes.
Then you have investment, and then you have to be careful. See what I'm saying?
Yes, you do.
You have to be careful.
Sure,
and
look
that's
at Soho.
Kinda,
there's the example.
And I kind of feel like I want to be the self-appointed policeman for that, to make sure that we have that balance between, we want investment, we want the smart investment, but we also don't want Motel 6 on Main Street.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean,
it's a great thing to walk down the street, and I know two or three of artists that have storefronts on Main Street.
I love it.
That's a winning formula for keeping that healthy balance in a sort of a creative economy.
Yep. And it's our job to make sure that, you know, we get people to buy their wares, right? To get enough people in front of them to buy their wares, or to support them if they have if their main sales are web. And you know, we've got a group moving in right now that they're going to have a storefront.
This is Catskill Commons, because they have both a storefront and a web presence.
And they're telling me, you know, they're very, very, focused on their web sales, and that's going to be how they're going to basically feed themselves.
Cool. So I did want to ask, what is the annual budget for Catskill, for the village of Catskill? What's our annual budget?
So we're about $6 million.
$6 million.
So we have...
And how much of that is sort of what you would call required? I mean, that you absolutely know you have to pay. You mentioned health care, the various things that we're obligated to.
Oh, $5,999,099. I mean,
much to play with.
There's not much to play with, and it's every year. And we have three funds. We have a water fund,
right?
We have a sewer fund, and we have your regular, we call it the A fund or the general fund, and that's where people's property taxes go into.
Right.
And there's really zero room there's zero wiggle room. So we have to be very creative and be very wise how to spend that money. How much more time we got? We're out.
I'm sorry
to
say.
I
hope this is the beginning of many conversations, and maybe even on a monthly basis, we could ask you to come in and give us updates. It'd be wonderful to do that.
Yep. One plug. July 1st is our fireworks.
Ah.
We're looking for vendors. We're looking for people, artists, that they want to come down and show their wares. Reach out to me. Track me down. Track one of the trustees down. But July 1st, it's a Saturday night. Big fireworks show. Music down at the point. Or down at the Dutchman's Landing.
And that's where our new farmer's market will be.
That's exactly. And they're going to, and we're looking to have some of those vendors come out that night.
How exciting. So,
hey, I really appreciate you having me.
I
know this
is
like a fast fire.
I know.
I got half of my stuff still in my hands.
Well,
so
we'll do it again soon. I hope.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Vinny.
Hey, thanks, listeners. Bye.